Hey, welcome to episode 85 of the Infants Podcast. I'm Brian.
This is Johnny.
And we have a special episode for you guys this week. We are talking in an interview fashion to artist and friend of Johnny's, Joe Caroni.
Yeah.
And Joe is, one, this interview was awesome. I loved it. It goes for a while. I'm going to warn you right now. This might be
this is an extended episode.
This is definitely an extended $5 episode.
$5
Patreon. You're going to, yeah, this is going to be worth all $5 you've donated this month. It was fun. We learned a lot.
Yeah.
We learned a lot about Joe, but just kind of like the whole process that goes into being an artist,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty cool. So Joe is he's a fine artist for Disney and
Lucasfilm
and he works a lot with IDW and if you were ever interested in learning how to get into comics, this is the episode to listen to.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a working artist. He travels around the country. He gets to go to Celebration, Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool. So we're going to go ahead and play the interview for Joe here in just a second. Just a reminder, make sure to listen all the way to the end.
Yes.
Because we have a special thing that we're doing for our next episode of Cover Up, where we talk about our favorite comic book covers in an audio way. Anyway.
Well, they get to see the pictures on the website.
Yeah, they're on the website.
And while you're on the website, go to that Patreon link. And donate that $5
there
to the
you
Patreon.
Go. So make sure you listen all the way to the end.
Yeah. More than $5 is okay too.
All right.
Just saying, give me some $5. Give me some $5 love there.
Well, if they do $5, you make them a collage.
Hey.
If they do $10, I make them a badass Infants Podcast t shirt. So anywho.
So $5 is worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, $10 is worth it for a $10 t shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Cool. All right. So this is our interview with Joe Caroni. Enjoy. Hey, guys. We're here with Joe Caroni, artist extraordinaire. Does some amazing Star Wars everything and has a pretty great resume for comics. Johnny and Joe go back a little ways.
A little bit. Yeah.
And so, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Do you want to kick off?
Yeah, sure. So, Joe, you know, we've known each other for a little bit of time, but I don't know, like, where you went to school for art. Did you go to school for art, you know, or were you just pretty much, like, that good right off the bat?
Well, I mean, I definitely had an interest in art at a very early age. I can remember being as young as almost 3 years old, and I remember drawing and coloring and whatnot. But some of my earliest vivid memories have to do with me making art and drawing and stuff. But I had an interest in it at an early age, and then I went to school. So I had plenty of training, but growing up, I had my first art lessons when I was like 8 years old because my mom found an art tutor in the neighborhood, and she knew that I was, my mom knew that I had I was inclined artistically because I was always drawing all the time and collecting comics and drawing comic book characters. So she got me into an art class, a private art class, outside of the one I had in my regular grade school. And then, I just had training. I took Saturday art classes all through grade school and high school or junior high, I guess, in high school. And then, I went to CCAD in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus College of Art and Design. So I got my college degree and, a bachelor's degree in illustration from there. And, that's kind of where my training came from. I've been training my whole life and drawing my whole life.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. We've seen like some of the stuff you share on Facebook, or you shared a little while ago of some of the things you found from when you were younger.
Oh yeah, my old drawings.
Yeah, those were really yeah. cool to see. And I know I looked at them and it's like, man, I can't even draw that good now. It's a good thing I can.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, like your mom, that's cool that she like was making sure that you were going in that direction. That's awesome.
Yeah, she always. Both of my parents were really supportive of my artistic endeavors at a very early age. My mom was the one who kind of, she nurtured it in a more, I would say, well, I don't say more direct way, but I mean, I guess my mom was the one who was responsible for basically putting me into art classes.
Okay.
My dad was also very supportive, though he wanted me to be, he was hoping I would follow his path of like getting into sports and baseball and basketball and football and golf and all that stuff. And so my dad was always kind of nudging me that way, but he was still directly, like he was supportive because in an indirect way, because he was very much into movies and comics as well.
Oh, okay.
And so like that, I got the geeky stuff from my dad because my dad and I would go to movies all the time. He'd take me to the comic book store every week.
Nice.
He would take me to the toy store every week, and you know, I get tons of G.I. Joes and Star Wars toys growing up. So in a weird way, like my mom was more direct about the art, my dad was more kind of like responsible for my geekiness. But then just growing up as a child of the 80s, I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, the best movies, the best cartoons,
oh, yeah,
the best toys, you know. So we had it really good growing up. So
now, but, you grew up in Ohio, right?
No, I'm actually from Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
Indiana.
Oh, cool.
I moved to Columbus, Ohio for college. So I've been living in Ohio since I was about 18.
Okay.
The Ohio vacuum pulled him in and never let him go.
No, we never do. We never do.
I tried escaping once or twice. It just never worked out.
Well, they let you out, you know, they let you out of the state for periods of time, but you have to come back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I travel all the time, luckily. Right. So, but I always end up getting sucked back in, even when I leave for a week or something.
Well, sure. Now, you said you went to the Columbus School of Art and Design. Was there any other like comic book artists? I know there's a lot of comic book artists from this area that went to that school. Were there any other ones in your class that you remember? Or?
Oh yeah, I mean there were some. I mean, a lot of the people I graduated with went on to very successful careers in the comic industry or the animation industry or even the film industry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and my teacher, my junior year for the comic book illustration course, which was a brand new course back in 1994, 95, my teacher was Daryl Banks, who
oh, nice.
Was the artist
okay.
for Green
yeah.
Lantern for DC Comics back in the mid-90s. So he started up the comic book course at CCAD, and then I was in one of his first classes for that. And Daryl was a graduate of CCAD as well.
Yeah.
He came back and started teaching.
Yeah, we were actually
I took that class for a few semesters.
That's cool. Yeah, we were talking about whether he was in school with you or like
yeah, no, we didn't know like chronology wise where Daryl was compared to you. I remember when Daryl got popular with Green Lantern and that, so you know, he was doing Mid Ohio Con was like, you know, he was there every year.
Right. I want to say that he was, I don't think he was quite 10 years. I'm trying to think of how old he is. He might be maybe 8 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
9 at the most. So he graduated, probably about 8 years before me or something. But we ended up becoming friends, you know. I took his class and then took it for a couple semesters. And then about a year later, he got so busy with Green Lantern for DC at the time, he couldn't keep up teaching the class at CCAD. And I'd already graduated, and I was one of his, I guess, best students. So he and we were friend, we stayed in touch after I graduated from CCAD. So because I was already getting published when I was in school for independent comics and some role-playing game art. So I was one of the, like, I was just a really serious student at the school, and I was already getting published, and I was definitely intent on breaking into the industry. So I was lucky enough to get published early on. So Daryl knew that. And then, so about a year after I graduated, he called me up. We were friends, talking all the time anyway. And he's like, "Hey, I got it. You know, I can't teach a class anymore." He's like, "Would you want to take over for me?" And I needed the extra income at the time. So I was like, "Yeah, sure." So I ended up teaching the comic book illustration course. Actually, it would have been a couple years after I graduated. So this would have been in 98. So, okay. Yeah, so I ended up teaching at CCAD Daryl's class once he, so he basically passed it on to me. We joke that it was like, Optimus Prime passing on the matrix
nice.
Of leadership to Rodimus Prime, to Hot Rod.
Yeah.
And then I taught that class for 10 years, and then I passed on the matrix to Yuko Smith, my buddy Yuko. So now Yuko teaches the comic book class at CCAD. So.
That's awesome.
How was teaching? I mean, you know, obviously it's something that you didn't even think about, I'm sure, doing.
Right.
So how was that?
It was, I totally fell into it. it was fun. I didn't ever plan on being a teacher. I mean, I only did it part-time. So as I was teaching at CCAD, anywhere from 1 to 2 nights a week, some semesters I might have picked up an extra class here or there, and I was teaching like 3 nights a week, but it was still part-time, so I was doing my art career on the side. Well, not on the side, but that was my full-time job, but then I was teaching on the side. And I didn't plan to do it for 10 years. I had a knack for it, I guess. I enjoyed teaching because it got me out of the house
right.
1 or 2 nights a week, because like it is now, I mean, I'm totally doing my work full time. I never leave my home ever.
Okay.
I'm going to a convention. So yeah, but back then it was sort of the same thing, but it was nice to be around other artists as well. So getting out of the house and
sure.
1 or 2 nights a week, being around all these, you know, young artists who were trying to do what I was already doing for a living, and giving them encouragement and sharing that knowledge. So yeah, that was definitely, it was a fun time.
Cool.
It was a fun period.
So when you were younger, what were some of the characters that you gravitated towards when it came to, you know, those first Joe Caroni drawings?
Well, I started out drawing, I mean, in so many ways, Star Wars itself is really, really responsible, not for just making me who I am today, but in a big way it is that, and in a more specific way, it really is responsible for me, inspiring me to draw, because I saw the film, I saw A New Hope, well, it was just Star Wars, but I saw it when it first came out in 77. I was like 4 years old. And so, you know, back then we didn't have, you know, we didn't have VHS yet. We didn't have, even HBO wasn't, I mean, watching Star Wars on HBO didn't happen until 3 or 4 years later, I think. So. Mm-hmm. So as a kid, the only way you could really relive Star Wars after seeing it was through the action figures, the toys, and the comics. And my very first comic when I was 4 years old was the Star Wars movie adaptation from Marvel. I had the big oversized Treasury Edition
yep.
version
oh,
of
cool.
it.
Yep.
So I got that on my, like, I think it was my 4th birthday, actually, in July. So I saw Star Wars that summer. I got the comic book that July. And I, you know, I had just seen Star Wars like a month or so earlier, and I got the big oversized comic. So I would just draw. I was just drawing Star Wars. I was already drawing, but like that's what really kicked it into gear for me. So I would I would start drawing Star Wars characters. You know, that I would basically draw from the comic book, like pictures of Darth Vader and Stormtroopers and R2-D2 and stuff. So that was what really kind of just kicked it off right there. Was my first comic was Star Wars, and then seeing the movie, and then my imagination, you know, was drawing these characters and you know, playing with the toys, you know, on top of that. But the toys didn't come out till later, so I didn't really get to relive the movie with the toys until they came out. I think it must have been, I remember, because the early bird figure, when did the toys came out, like later, like after,
yeah, it was like
that year,
70 late 70s,
78.
Yeah, it was 78, because the early bird came out December of 77. They hadn't even made any figures
right,
yet.
So
they didn't know if the movie was going to be anything or, you know.
And yeah, but I remember not having the toys right away, but it was later. So I remember just having the comics and always reading the Marvel comics, like the adaptation of the movie. I had those comics, and then... Yeah, I remember getting the toys after Christmas that year, so it would have been early 1978 at that point.
Yep.
So I remember going to Sears and actually buying some of the two packs, or they had the three packs with the figures. And
yeah.
We were getting off. I'm totally like flashbacking now, but I'm like,
oh, that's cool. That's what we want. Yeah.
but yeah, so that's how, I guess, Star Wars was the main influence. Like, those were the characters, like, at a very early age, at 4 years old, that's all, like, nothing's changed. Like, even now, it's like, I gotta paint Darth Vader, I gotta paint Luke Skywalker, I gotta paint Princess Leia. Like, this has been my life since I've been 4 years
You're
old.
You're like, I've been doing this since 4 years old, and now I'm getting paid for it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so it was always... I didn't realize I could get paid for it, really. I mean, I guess in somewhere in late high school or early college, it was probably right before college, I realized I could make it. I had the possibility of working my potential to be, eventually make a living as an illustrator. But I think it was probably somewhere in the middle of college or it was right before college when the Dark Horse comic started coming out with Dark Empire.
Yeah.
And that was like that would have been 91, I think. 90,
yeah.
90, 91. So that was right at the beginning of college for me, I guess. But I remember back then thinking, like, oh, wow, Star Wars comics are coming back. And then on top of that, West End Games had already been putting out these role-playing game books from Star Wars.
I remember those, too.
So I was collecting those. And back then, and there wasn't a whole lot coming out with Star Wars after Jedi. I mean, from 84 to 1988, there wasn't anything. And then in 88...
Droids and Ewoks was the only thing I really remember.
Yeah, there wasn't. It was like a very dark period for Star Wars fans. And I remember Star Wars was still a big deal to me, even though there wasn't a lot coming out. So when the West End Games books came out in 88, I was like, whoa, this is awesome, like D&D for Star Wars. So
yeah.
I instantly started buying those. And then, of course, the Dark Horse put out the comics for Dark Empire, and that was like, that right there was even a bigger resurgence for Star Wars fans. So those two moments right there are really what kept me kind of going with Star Wars. And then it was those two things in college when I realized, like, oh wait, West End Games is putting out these books with artwork in them, and then Dark Horse is putting out Star Wars comics. And I thought, well, not only can I maybe be a comic book artist, but maybe I can get paid to do Star Wars for a living.
So yeah,
that's when it kind of hit me in the, like, my sophomore junior year of college, where I was like, oh, I can maybe, like, Star Wars is starting to come back now, and maybe I can actually, you know, as a professional illustrator, or wanting to be a professional illustrator, maybe I could pursue some projects with Star Wars. And then that's how basically it started. I just ended up contacting West End Games right when I graduated college, and they ended up hiring me to do some freelance work for their books. And then, you know, about I don't know how many years later, almost, it probably would have been about 8 or 9 years later, I ended up doing stuff for Dark Horse. But in between that time, I had already done a lot of Star Wars art for different licensors and stuff, too.
Nice. Right. So what other, like you said you did some independent books back in the 90s. What books did you do?
Oh, gosh, nothing no one will remember. I mean, I did the series. I mean, I worked with some creative people that actually had, like, some credentials and a pedigree in the industry. My very first independent comic was this comic called Dead Kid, which was about this zombie teenager, which would probably actually do really well now.
Yeah.
We were definitely ahead of our time. But it was like kind of like a tongue-in-cheek, kind of like Archie meets, God, how do I describe it? I mean, it was basically like if you took the characters of Archie, but you put like the main character was like a zombie skateboarding teenager.
Okay.
So it was very lighthearted and very fun and very, but it was a comic book and it was written by Tom and Mary Beerbohm, who were writing Legion. Yeah, they were writing for DC Legion of Superheroes.
I was gonna say they were doing Legion. I remember that.
I think there's some of Legion, those in the closet behind you.
my buddy Chris Sprouse, he was drawing for them at the time. I think he's in Columbus. I ended up drawing that comic for Tom and Mary through an independent publisher. And then Keith Giffen did some covers for the books, or he did the first issue cover, I think.
Wow.
So, Keith Giffen, I mean, Lobo. And
exactly.
So that was kind of cool. And that was my sophomore year in art college. So that was my first, like, really big break in the industry, even though it was a very small publisher. And I think the print run on the comic was, it wasn't more than a few thousand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't think it was more. Yeah, it wasn't. But I mean, it was out there and it sold and it pops up on eBay every now and again. And then I did a few other books, Blood and Roses. And
that one, I've heard of that one, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that was from the guys at Blue Line Comics or Blue Line Pro. They used to do their own comics back. They called it Sky Comics or Night Press. But anyway, they're buddies of mine. I ended up working for them. They were the ones that hired me at Mid-Ohio Con back in like 1992.
Right.
In Mansfield, back before they moved it to Columbus, they actually had Mid-Ohio Con in Mansfield. And my sophomore year in art college, I went to Mid-Ohio Con that November in Mansfield with my roommate. And then I went there with the intention of showing my samples to any publisher. Basically.
Right.
So I was already like, well, I'm in college, but I'm going to try to get, you know, I'm going to try to get real work. And they ended up hiring me. I gave my samples to the right people. And then that was Blue Line Pro. And then they ended up hiring me. And then, got after that, did some comics for them. And then trying to think, I did some role-playing game art for Champions, the role-playing game. I don't know if you guys remember.
It's familiar,
Yeah, it was like a superhero Dungeons & Dragons type game. It was Champions. It was by Iron Crown Enterprises, I think.
Yeah.
I think this would have been my junior year in college, and I illustrated some of their role-playing game books. And so that was kind of what got me started being published, and then of course then I jumped into doing Star Wars when I graduated.
So we crossed paths in the 90s and we didn't even know it, because I was going to Mid-Ohio Con when it was in Columbus, like from probably 94 up.
Yeah, that would have been, I think I started, a buddy of mine, Justin Chung, who was living in Columbus at the time, he worked for the promoter Roger Price.
Yeah.
And Justin was doing all the promotion for Mid-Ohio Con. He was doing all the website stuff for Mid-Ohio Con. So, and Justin was one of my best friends. So I think my first, like, appearance, like, as a professional artist was at Mid-Ohio Con. This would have been either 94 or 95.
Wow.
So that was the first year I actually had a table, and it was at Mid-Ohio Con. And yeah, I may have seen you there.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure we crossed paths.
Because I did every Mid Ohio Con from like 94. Well, technically like 92, but as a professional, 94 all the way until like 2007.
Yeah, that was the end of it. Yeah. When Wizard World came in and bought it.
Wizard. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, and now I did my first. I've only done a couple Wizard World Mid Ohio cons.
Okay.
I'm getting ready to do another one. I'll be at Wizard World Columbus this year. I think it's late. It's like July or August or something.
It's definitely a different show. I mean, Mid Ohio Con was just like, I tell people, I'm like, that's the show that I loved the most, I think. And that back in the 90s, it was just like a good time to go to a show. And that, because, you know, Image and the death of Superman and all that stuff had happened. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, crazy times. I mean, I remember meeting half the people who worked on the death of Superman one year. And I'm like, I have a trade paperback signed by half the people that wrote and did the art for that book.
Yeah, I mean, Mid Ohio Con got really, well, back in the day before the industry kind of imploded. I mean, back then, even Mid Ohio Con, and they're like back then there weren't as many shows as there are now. So you would get like at a Mid Ohio Con, like actual publishers used to show.
Oh yeah,
like Dark Horse and DC and Image, and you would actually get. You know, now you don't really get that. There are so many shows. Most of those publishers only do the bigger events.
Mm, yep.
That
I met Brian Bendis before he was Brian Bendis at a Mid Ohio Con. So
right.
It's like
yeah.
It's just weird to like, you know, talk about that show and be like, oh yeah, such and such was there, and it's like you're like, okay, wow, and we don't get that anymore.
Yeah. No, not really. But I mean, yeah, I remember meeting John Byrne at Mid Ohio Con.
Yeah,
Brian Boland.
Yep.
God, there were some. Mid Ohio Con used to be. It was a smaller show than the Wizard Show, but it was a much more family friendly and just. I don't know. It was just something.
Roger knew how to do that show. I mean, he really was.
Yeah.
Good at running a show and getting the right people in, and I mean. You talk to different artists about, you mentioned Mid Ohio Con, and there's the artists that went to that show, and they just like they sing the praises of Roger. So, you know,
yeah, Roger's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sad when he sold that show.
Oh yeah,
a lot of us were. I mean, that was my hometown show for so many years.
You don't live in Columbus now, right? You moved. You're not in Columbus anymore, right?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just 2 hours north.
Okay.
Dusky, so.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if you were still there or not.
So, Joe, I think it's funny you talk about when you started going and you brought along your samples and things like that. And, you know, I remember hearing stories of, you know, especially when the publishers were at shows, they would have, you know, they'd sit down and kind of critique your stuff. That doesn't really seem to happen so much anymore at conventions. How?
It does, but you have. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead and finish. Yeah, I thought you had more.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to ask about how it's different now with how big, you know, just how much spotlight is on the industry and how big a lot of these conventions are now with the things like Wizard World and, you know, obviously San Diego, New York, C2E2, that kind of stuff. You know, do artists have the opportunity to sit down with publishers anymore like that?
Oh, yeah, they do. San Diego... I know they do a portfolio review session. You can go to the Dark Horse booth at San Diego Comic Con and they'll have editors specifically there at certain times set up to do portfolio reviews. So it still happens. Yeah. All the time it shows. I mean, it may not be always advertised, but a lot of the time, you know, like how I did it, I just, you know, there was no advertisement. I knew there were going to be publishers at Mid Ohio Con back in 92. And I was like, well, I'm just going to put my samples in some people's hands and hope for the best and, you know, actually talk to them. And I mean, I just, I kind of knew I had to do, if I was going to be serious, I had to put some legwork in. Mm-hmm. So and that's what a lot of artists do today. Like I'll be at a convention, and you know, especially the bigger ones, I'll get at least a few people that bring their portfolios to me and go, hey, you know, can you give me a critique? And I mean, I can't really give them a job or anything, right, but they'll want a critique. I mean, that happens all the time. As far as publishers looking at work, yeah, I know that, like, you know, New York Comic Con, I think sometimes Marvel will announce some kind of, like, you know, we're going to have C.B. Sapolsky looking over portfolios from this time, you know, get in line, basically. And then, so they do it. It's just sometimes they advertise it, sometimes they don't.
Okay, so. Cool. All right, so cool. Kind of, I guess, jumping forward, you know, you've done work on, you know, X-Files, True Blood, G.I. Joe, Doctor Who, Farscape, which we'll get into that in a minute. You know, do you enjoy doing, you know, the comics with the layout and things like that? Or do you, because, you know, you're also an illustrator with the covers and that kind of stuff. I mean, do you have a preference one way or the other of, you know, sitting down and drawing a whole book, or, you know, kind of getting to go wild with a kick-ass cover?
Well, for me, I mean, the whole reason I got into this was because of comic books and being, you know, fascinated with the medium as a young kid and collecting comics and growing up with, you know, Avengers and Batman and Superman and Spider-Man. Pretty much I collected everything. I had a huge comic collection. I mean, for me, I wanted to do storytelling, whatever that entailed, whether it was sequential art or whether it was covers, whether it was, I mean, a big part of me still always is attracted to sequential storytelling, and that was how I broke into the business. But now, you know, I wanted to do covers, and I think that's true of, like, any comic artist, is that, you know, they might break in to, you know, drawing stories and pencils and inking, but ultimately they, you know, they want to do covers or they want to do more. And I think with me, it was just a matter of, like, it was sort of the same thing. Like, I wanted to draw comics, but hey, wouldn't it be really cool to do covers? Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, it was like, well, you know, here I am penciling and inking. I want to, you know, push my color work. It's always, for me, I guess, personally speaking, it was always about pushing myself to do better and better work. I've done plenty of sequentials, but I guess ultimately it didn't really matter as long as I was just, you know, for me, it's more about what the project is and what the content is, if it's something I'm attracted to. And I think ultimately I get more satisfaction from doing color work and cover work than I do nowadays in, say, sequential art. Like, if DC or Marvel called me up, if Marvel said, hey, we want you to illustrate the Star Wars comic, I would be like, heck yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'll, you know. But if some smaller publisher was like, hey, here's 22 pages of a story, it's like, well, you know, it depends on what it is. It depends on what the page rate might be. Depends on what the deadline might be. So, more often than not, I mean, I gravitate towards work, cover work and color work, because I can turn it around faster, and also because color work usually pays more. And in order for me to make a living in this industry, it's yeah. like, as much as I love storytelling in sequential form, it's like, well, it doesn't always, it takes way longer to do that. And I'm not, you know, I can't just bust out. I mean, I can maybe do a page a day or a day and a half. It's somewhere in there. I don't know what my average is. Anywhere from, like, it depends on the page, but yeah. I could pencil a page from 6 to 10 hours, I guess, somewhere in there. But to get that kind of work and to keep that kind of work going, it's just I can make twice or three times as much money painting something and doing a cover. So, you know, I don't want to, like, basically just break my back doing sequentials every single day. So
yeah, no, that makes
sense.
And
with Star Wars, yeah, and my main passion is Star Wars and Star Trek to a degree, too. So, you know, it's not like if I'm not getting Star Wars comic book work, then, you know, I'm going to go after Star Wars work wherever I can get it. And a lot of Star Wars work that I'm offered or a lot of the opportunities that are presented are for paintings and covers and full color things. And so that's kind of where I let my focus draw me to, basically. So it's, you know, but that said, if Marvel said, hey, we have a 6-issue Star Wars series, we want you to pencil and ink it or whatever, I'd be, heck yeah, I'm on board.
Totally. Heck yeah.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, that's a cool thing, like, you know, to learn kind of about the difference.
Yeah.
There.
The one I remember, like the most recent one I remember where you actually did the interiors and the covers was that Star Trek The Next Generation Hive book.
Yeah, that was back. That would have been about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. Just the
maybe?
Detail on it. It's like, man, that had to be a time consuming book to do everything
yeah,
on pretty
I mean,
much.
It was only 4 issues, but yeah, at the time, I think it probably took about 6 months for that series to wrap up.
Wow.
So I just because I was doing the covers and the interiors, so it was a lot of work, and it
yeah.
was 4 issues, and that was something I'm really proud of because I got to work with Brandon Braga.
Yeah.
Worked on First Contact, and he worked on the Next Generation TV show, and so we got to basically do. It was basically a sequel to Star Trek Nemesis, and it was sort of like the final Star Trek Next Generation movie, like the one, the Next Generation movie that we really should have gotten, but
yeah.
we didn't because Nemesis wasn't really that great.
Ugh.
So it was sort of like Brandon had this idea. He's like, well, let's take this idea for the movie that we're never going to see now,
yeah.
but let's do it as a comic. And that was a high point in my career because I got to, I wished it was a couple issues longer because it was only 4 issues, but there was so much story that there were so many things we could have fleshed out, but it still ended up being really fun. I mean,
oh yeah, it's a really good story. I mean, it is cinematic in its scope and that, and that's what I'm like, you know, when I was seeing the art at your table, when, you know, you would have pages in that, I'm just like, this book had to take forever to do. It's just the details on the Borg and that, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, my sequential art is, it also comes from the fact that, especially working for IDW, the page rates aren't really, you know, you're not going to get Marvel or DC page rates
right
for a middle tier publisher like IDW or someone. So they often pay me for finished art, you know. There isn't, say, like a penciler rate and an inker rate and then a color rate. It's sort of like, well, you know, this is as much we can give you. You know, and then so it's sort of like, okay, well, they need, you know, I was inking myself. I did have the inking help, too. I brought in a few friends to help me ink that book.
But, okay.
So it was sort of like trying to, you know, had they only just paid me for pencils and they had a budget for the inker and a budget for the colorist, then it would have been like, yeah, no problem. I'll bust out these pencils. I can keep everything loose and just have the inker worry about it. But no, it was
yeah.
like, okay, I got to put all, I had to put all the detail. I had to manage the color. My buddies at Hi-Fi colored the book, but their budget, because the page rate wasn't the greatest to begin with. So I was basically managing the color while my friends were at Hi-Fi, Brian Miller and his team were coloring the book. So it was a lot.
Like, yeah.
It was, I mean, behind the scenes, I was doing more than just drawing the book, so, or just penciling rather. So, so yeah, it was an undertaking, and I would have liked that series to have been bigger, but
yeah,
right.
You know, I don't know. If I'm just getting paid to do pencils, I can just, you know, I can knock out sequential pages all day, but Yeah, it's like I don't really get that kind of work. It seems like the more color work I do, that's the work that keeps coming my way. So, yeah, it's all about just trying to make a living. And
sure.
Basically, I gravitate towards wherever the work pulls me in a way. Yeah. So.
Yeah, like I have most of your Farscape run from Boom of your covers and stuff.
Okay.
I wet my pants over Farscape. So,
I'm a huge Farscape fan too.
Yeah, and it wasn't until I think the second or third time Johnny introduced us, and I was like, "Oh wait."
Yeah.
I put the name and the face together
and the name and the covers together.
I said, "Damn." So, but
right.
Awesome. Okay, so let's talk like kind of modern Star Wars, right? Because you have a pretty interesting, I don't know if it's arrangement or work history with Lucasfilm and Disney now. Mm-hmm. I know we see your posts from things like Celebration, yep. And you go out to the parks, it seems like, constantly talking to Johnny. You know, so what is it exactly that you do for Lucasfilm and Disney? And then I guess, you know, without spoiling things or anything, like, how involved are you in like the different bits of art that come out with the promotional bits of the movies and things like Rebels and the other comics and stuff like that?
Well, everything I do is still freelance and it's still project based, and it goes through Lucasfilm for approval, whether I'm doing something directly for Disney or if I'm doing something for Star Wars Insider magazine or if I'm doing something for another licensee that has a Star Wars license, like Becker and Mayer Books. I'm illustrating, doing interior illustrations for a, say, Star Wars propaganda book or something. So when I do stuff for Disney, and really my relationship with Disney right now regarding Star Wars directly, I do artwork for Disney Wonderground, which is their fine art division. It's sort of like, if you know what Acme Archives is, and they do like Star Wars fine art, and they do fine art for like lots of other properties like Futurama and Halo and got X-Files. And so Acme has all these licenses, and Star Wars is one of their licenses. So which I'm doing stuff for Acme, I'm working on stuff for them right now as well. But regarding Disney directly, Disney Wonderground is the fine art division of Disney Parks. So you have the two theme parks, Orlando and Anaheim. So Disney Wonderground is sort of like the Acme Archives of Disney. It's their own fine art division that basically sells Star Wars art, exclusive Star Wars art that you can only buy at the parks from Disney Wonderground. So, and they use this artwork, they'll put it on t-shirts, they'll put it on mugs that you can buy at the park, they'll put it on
anything,
whatever, basically. right.
If throw it against the wall, so, if it sticks, it'll stay.
If there's a flat surface, like, it's on there.
You know, oh, no, it don't have to be flat.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically Disney hires me to illustrate Star Wars fine art, you know, and I did two pieces for them last year for A New Hope, and then which was a Vader piece and a Princess Leia piece, and you know, they would sell posters and postcards of this artwork that you can buy at the park, and they have me out for signings. I'll go out to the park and I'll do a signing when the artwork is debuts, and then this past year I just did. The artwork just came out last month, or came out, I think, in mid-December, actually. I did some Force Awakens artwork for Disney Wonderground. So, again, this is artwork that premiered in the parks and at Disney World in Orlando, they have the Star Wars Outpost, which is like the big Star Wars store
in
the park. So if you go into that store, you can actually see Star Wars art for sale. You'll see it framed, you'll see it on the shelves, and you can say, oh, that print looks really cool. I'm going to buy that print for 30 or 40 bucks or whatever it is. And some of those prints are mine.
I seen some when I was down there in November.
Okay. Yeah.
So, there's a store at Disney Springs that actually sells them to, called D-Trend, right. And they have like an area that's for art, and your stuff was all over the place when I was down there. Like, I can't get away from this guy.
yeah, that's in Disney Springs, right?
And then there's Launch Bay, and they sell your stuff at Launch Bay, too, and Hollywood Studios.
I've been to Disney World in Orlando a bunch of times, but since I was there when was I there? Last summer, and I went to the Star Wars Outpost, and I saw my artwork there.
Yeah.
But I didn't go into the park, so I didn't go into the launch bay there. I wasn't sure if they were selling it there or not, so that's good to know that they were doing that.
Yeah, they have it at both the Star Wars stores in Hollywood Studios, because there's the one that when you walk out of Star Tours, there's that store right as you're walking out the Tatooine store. And they had some of it in there, and then they had some at Launch Bay, too.
Okay, cool.
And it was the Leia piece. So, I seen the Leia piece a lot, actually.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So now they're doing that with my Force Awakens pieces at both parks. So
yeah, those look awesome.
Orlando or Anaheim. I did like a BB-8 piece. I did a Captain Phasma piece, and then I did a Rey piece. And right now, as I'm like talking to you guys, I'm working on some Rogue One art for Disney Wonderground.
Nice.
So you guys can have the exclusive on that news.
Anything specific, or can you talk about it?
It's all K2SO.
I guess I can. I mean, the artwork, the concepts have been approved. I mean, I can't show anything, but
sure.
It's basically I'm doing two new pieces for Rogue One, and I shouldn't really say too much about them.
No.
I'll just say I'm doing two brand new Rogue One pieces.
Okay, and then, cool. How long do you got till you?
I think they'll be coming out. I think the plan is for them to come out at Star Wars Celebration.
Oh, okay.
Go to the park. Yeah, so I'm working on them right now.
Nice.
So I'm as long as we can get them printed in time. I think the Orlando, at least the Orlando park. Will be selling the Rogue One art, and then I think the Anaheim park will probably be offering it probably a little shortly after that.
So in the process of doing like one of those pieces, how long does it take you from beginning to end?
I basically will work on a concept. I'll do like a rough color Photoshop version in maybe a half day or a full day at the most. It depends on how complex it is. I would just say like it takes me a day to do the concept.
Okay.
And then I'll send it in, and either they'll approve it as is or they'll approve it with changes. And then at that point I'll get, you know, I might get notes back saying, well, you know, include this character, but take this character out, or maybe, you know, make sure to address this and don't forget that, those kind of things.
Okay.
And then I'll do, but from that point, you know, I just usually include the revisions in my final, or I'll do like I'll take like, I don't know, 10 minutes to do the revisions on the rough version. I'll send that back. Once that gets approved, then from that point, I would say it takes me, again, it depends on the piece, but it could be anywhere from a couple days to maybe 4 days at the most.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's quick turnaround.
I'm doing all digital now.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
are you using a Cintiq or?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm painting everything digitally and doing, you know, everything from starting with the concept all the way to the final. There's a lot of, there might be a little traditional elements in there depending on what the piece is, but yeah, most of my work is fully digital, so if it's not too complex of a piece, I can usually bust it out in a couple days.
Wow. Okay.
But cool. yeah so I've been trying to get faster and just trying to get as much work as I can and just keep putting stuff out. So yeah, I mean, I've always worked digitally with color, but I did a lot of hand drawing, and I still draw by hand, but these days just keep up with the turnaround in publishing, especially, is you know, it's a very hectic pace. So the more that I can do digitally, the faster I can get the artwork done.
Right, and there's so many more tools with what you're doing digitally that you didn't have doing with pencil and paper. I mean, it does help.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm still, you know, even now that I've gone full digital in the last year or so, like completely, fully digitally on pieces, I'm still like playing with like, okay, how, you know, just different techniques and stuff. And so I'm still sort of, which is good because like I always like pushing my work and I don't like, you know, doing the same thing over and over. I like, you know, challenging myself, and this has definitely been challenging to go, okay, you know, now that I'm working fully digitally, it's like, what can I get away with? How, you know, how much further, you know, how much more do I need to paint? How much? So it's been a really fun, challenging experience.
So right. So you said you're doing Celebration. Obviously, you do a lot of conventions, and that season's starting up, what, next week? Or yeah, by the time we like, put this out, it'll be that week, probably.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just every year. It just
Emerald City?
Earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
How many conventions are you doing this year?
Well, so far I've got about 13 scheduled,
wow,
which is already a lot. Yeah, I think last year the most I ever did was 20.
Okay.
So, that was insane. Like doing 20, which basically averages out to almost two shows a month.
Yeah.
Pretty much, which wasn't really the case because there were, like, especially in the summer, like I might be gone maybe 3 or 4 weekends in a row, like at different events. And then I might have like say a month or another month off where I'm not doing any shows.
Right.
Maybe like in January or February or something.
I was going to say December and January are your vacation months.
Yeah, pretty much. Like those are the months where I'm like, okay, I got to like draw and paint as fast as I can.
And then it snows and you're trapped in your house anyway. So.
Yeah. I mean, usually my busiest season for making art has always been like fall and winter.
Sure.
For, you know. And then spring and summer were the travel months for conventions back in the day. But
right.
Now conventions have started, these shows just get bigger and bigger, and then they start to compact on one another.
Right.
So they tend to spread out, you know, so like they push Emerald City Comic Con further in the schedule ahead because the same promoters are doing C2E2
right,
a few months later in Chicago. So now I'm doing Emerald City Comic Con in March instead of April.
Yeah.
So it's like these shows just, so every year it's like my convention season gets stretched out more and more, and I'm like, I end up adding more and more shows. So I don't know. I don't want to do 20 shows again this year.
But sure.
I mean, at the same time, I need to make a living, and I would it depends on my art schedule. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. How does it cut into like your regular work shift, you know, at home? How does that cut into doing a 2 or 3 day show? Is it
a
drastic?
I don't really have like a regular work schedule because my work is so erratic. Like I could go a month or two without really any freelance assignments. I mean, I could pursue stuff and make stuff happen.
Well, sure.
But then I'm like, well, I got these shows coming up, so I may not pursue a lot of work that month because I know I've got like maybe a really big show or a couple of shows that month to do. But then, you know, I kind of, when things are starting to go, when work is starting to dry up a little bit, I'll just start sending emails out to editors going, or art directors, hey, I'm available, you know, yada, yada. And then, that's the only time when it, like, if I have a show and there's a big deadline, yeah, that's like kind of what I'm dealing with right now, actually, with
right,
the city. I've got all this Star Wars art due next week and I have to leave. So yeah, that kind of sucks.
Right.
But, I don't usually cancel shows if I can help it, especially when I'm invested in them, like, you know, like with all these fees and everything.
Sure, yeah.
So yeah, just.
So are there shows that you look forward to more during the year than other shows? I mean, you know, they're all kind of the same, but is there something that one that go you're like, I look forward to that show every year?
Yeah, which shows don't you like?
No, we don't want to know that.
Yeah. I'll tell you the ones I do like a lot are New York Comic Con is probably my favorite show. That is just eclipsed San Diego for me in terms of just how fun it is and the environment. I mean, I love Comic Con, I love San Diego, but I've been doing that show for like 15 years. But it's not quite the same show it used to be. It's still fun, and it's more of a necessary show to be there,
right?
To keep up appearances and to meet with publishers, but it's not a show I say that I go to make money at necessarily.
Right.
Because for what it costs to get out there, for what I spend for a booth and for what I spend on travel, I'm lucky to break even at that event. It used to not be that way. It used to be like I could go to San Diego and still make some really great money at that event.
Right.
But now it's sort of like, I go there to, it feels more like a chore now. It's still fun. I still love going, but it feels more like, okay, it's more Hollywood and more.
Yeah, it's like a trade show now instead of a comic show.
Yeah, more of a trade show.
Yeah.
But New York is still like the energy and it's very similar to San Diego, but I don't know. I like it more because I can make some really good money in New York.
Sure.
I have a lot of fun there. So that's my one. I love New York Comic Con. C2E2 is fun time. It's in Chicago. I love going to Chicago. That's a really fun one. Emerald City was really fun last year.
Okay.
And that's why I'm going back next week. I'll be going back there next weekend. So.
All righty.
Emerald City was really fun. And Reed Pop, they put on some really great shows. They mm-hmm. do Emerald City. They do New York. They do C2E2. They do Celebration. And
okay,
pretty much any Reed Pop show. I mean, those guys.
I haven't got to go to any of theirs yet.
Yeah, their shows are the best, I would say. I mean, yeah, Reed Pop knows how to put on a good show. And Wizard World, as for as much flack as they get,
yeah,
they've been treating me really well. So
okay.
So their shows, yeah, they might be a little, the ticket prices are a little bit inflated. And
right.
The guests. Charge a lot for their autographs,
Sure.
So, I mean, I get the complaints and everything with Wizard World, but, they do put on some fun shows regardless. So I'm able to go to Wizard World and they take care of me. So, they always do a really good job of, their volunteers and the staff. And they do really, I love working with them. So,
okay.
So yeah, I got I'm doing. I think I'm doing like 3 Wizard Worlds this year.
Oh wow, okay.
So but yeah, Reed. I'd say the Reed Pop shows, New York and Seattle and Chicago. And,
okay.
And Celebration. Those are probably my favorite events.
Cool. So we're gonna actually, I just like, what are you working on besides the Star Wars stuff? I know you got the Charmed cover coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that, are there any other covers that you're working on, or?
Yeah.
That you can talk about.
I've done 3 Charmed covers so far.
Okay.
For Dynamite. So I'm working on another one right now, which I'm waiting for approval on. So I think there'll be at least 4 covers for the new Charmed series.
Cool.
See for me. And then, I guess I can talk about it. I just did a cover for Star Trek, The Next Generation. It's a mirror universe.
Yeah, that comic book day thing, yeah.
Yeah, 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 okay. So, it's been announced.
Then. Yeah, so they announced it. I think the Free Comic Book Day issue is the first part of that story.
Okay.
And that, right, so yeah, it's been announced.
I did a variant cover.
Okay.
Just recently for that book. I don't think it's for the Free Comic Book Day story. I think it's I think it's for the first issue of the actual
series. Oh, okay. Cool.
If they're sold. Doing an action series, or maybe it is. I don't think it's a free comic book day cover, but maybe it is. I don't know. But they asked me to do a cover for that story.
Okay.
For cool. The Mirror Universe Next Generation. So.
And you'll have my print ready at your table. And
yeah, hopefully. Yeah, it's a really cool. I can talk about it a little bit. It's got Data and Picard. It's got the Mirror Universe versions of Data and Picard. So, it was really fun to do.
Does the Mirror Universe Data have a goatee?
No, he's got a Borg on.
Well, no, because they all have a goatee. But
Picard has the goatee.
Yeah, I'm right. Sure.
Well, Picard does. Yeah. Picard
does. Someone has to have a goatee.
Deanna Troi does.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think what else. I think it's just I've got the Charmed covers. I've got the Star Trek cover. And as far as comic book stuff goes, I think that's everything so far.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. All right. So we always kind of ask a few questions that are, you know, so like first, what comics are you reading right now? If any, if you have time.
Well, if I had time to read. I don't really collect anything. Mm-hmm. I'm such a big comic book geek. But the last number of years, I usually buy comics for the art. So I'll pick up, like, if a friend of mine is drawing the book, I'll pick it up or... it's usually friends, like if my buddy Tom Mandrake puts something out, I'll get that, or if Jan Durisma, his wife, is working on something, I'll definitely pick that up. It's just sort of random. I mean, it's not like I'm not collecting or following anything, but right. I do, you know, I'll go to the bookstore, the comic book shop, and I'll flip through stuff, and I'll be like, oh, I like the art in that, I'll grab that.
When you travel, do you try and hit up other comic book stores just kind of around the country to see kind of the differences and what's popular, or do you not really have time for that anymore?
Yeah, I mean, usually when I do a show and I'm traveling, I'm kind of usually stuck because the amount of time I have between being at the show all day and then, you know, usually I fly in the day of the show or the night before the show, and then I do the show all day, and then I go back to the hotel late at night and crash. So then get up and you do it all over again. I don't really have too much time to visit comic stores when I'm traveling. That said, whenever I go to New York Comic Con, I always make sure to check out Midtown Comics because I love that store. There's a few stores here and there. If I'm in town, I'll try to check out. But usually I'm just so swamped for time, and I'm so wiped out by the time the show's over, I'm just like, you know, have to go get dinner, hang out with friends, and then, you know, I don't really get to see too many sights when I'm traveling.
Sure. And then do you have time to watch like movies and TV at all? Are you watching anything interesting?
Oh yeah. When I'm at home. Yeah. All the time. I'm like, that's the one thing I do make time for. So I don't make time to follow or collect certain comics, but I am such a big movie nerd that I will, I love going to the movies. So, and I'm always watching movies when I'm working. So if something new is coming out that weekend, say like John Wick 2, like, hell yeah, I'm going to be there Friday night because I love the first John Wick.
So yeah. I'm going to,
I don't care how busy I am.
I'm going tomorrow night to see John Wick 2. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's sort of like if it's a big movie, I'll go out of my way to make time to see it that weekend. I'm always watching movies at home. I'm on TV. I don't know, what am I watching regularly now? Of course there's Walking Dead, you know, I watch that. There's, when Game of Thrones is on, I'm watching that. What else am I watching?
Did you watch Westworld?
You know, I still need to get caught. I got like 3 episodes into it.
Okay.
And I got distracted. I got sidetracked. So I need to go back. I have a bunch of them on my DVR, so I need to go back and start watching it again.
Yeah.
I've heard so many great things. And I love the first 3 episodes.
It's good stuff.
Really brilliant.
I loved Westworld.
Yeah, so I need to watch that. I was watching The Magicians with my daughter on Netflix, so I started watching that with her.
People have told me to watch that one, so yeah. I haven't watched that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Heroes. If you like like that first season of Heroes, the really good season.
Yeah.
Like, it has that similar tone. Like,
were there any other seasons of Heroes?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I watched, like, all, like, four seasons, and I was like,
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I'm with you. I watched every, I even watched the Rebirth thing that they did. Heroes Reborn. That's 13 hours I'm never getting back.
That's
like,
unfortunate, because I really love that first season. But
yeah.
I think what else I'm watching. Oh, gosh. I was watching Supergirl. I watched the whole first season of Supergirl not too long ago, mm-hmm. so I kind of binged through that. And I watched part of the second season as well. I'm not totally caught up.
Yeah.
The Supergirl surprised me. I wasn't expecting that to be, you know, it was very CW, mm-hmm. but then it took itself so seriously that you couldn't help but enjoy it and really mm-hmm. get invested in it. So DC television is where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, like even some of the Flash I've seen is really good. I haven't seen all of that. I watched like the first three seasons of Arrow, and that was really good. So
cool.
I'm kind of all over the map. It just depends on, like, you know, I'm always like behind. I'm not like Gotham. I watched like the first two seasons of Gotham, and I was like kind of on the fence with that one. I watched the first few seasons of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I was like, it's okay. I just couldn't totally get into it, but.
The storyline this year with Ghost Rider was fun at the beginning of the season.
The LMD stuff has been cool too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the Ghost Rider stuff was like really, they did a really good job for being on the television budget with that character.
Right.
So.
You know, it figures, you know, I stopped watching around season two, and then mm-hmm. of course the Ghost Rider season pops up, and I'm like, okay, now I got it.
And then the guy
gotta go back and watch that.
Gabriel Luna, who was playing Ghost Rider, was actor was awesome.
Yeah. So that's that's worth really checking out.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you're going to be. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was one other thing I watched was. I binge watched was Black Mirror on Netflix.
That's
that's a really great series.
I told Brian that he needs to watch that because it's so mind blowing in certain ways that it's like.
So is it more. Joe, you can answer this. Is it more like Outer Limits or Twilight Zone? Because that's kind of what it seems like to me, reading about it.
With technology.
Talk about it.
I would say there's not much difference between the two, but I guess Twilight Zone might be, I don't know. Twilight Zone's the more popular series of the two.
It's kind of just like those anthology type shows where it has that twist that you're like, wow.
I would say that Black Mirror is more... It's not as fantastical as say Outer Limits or Twilight Zone when it was at its most fantastical. Mm-hmm. Black Mirror has more social and political commentary ingrained in the storyline. So it's more realistic, I would say.
Yeah, they base it around technology. So the technology is what affects the story.
Okay.
And there's some stuff in there that's just like, oh my God.
Well, that'll be perfect because I just finished Vikings.
Like, wow, that's.
So,
yeah.
You know.
They use technology as sort of the jumping off point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Twilight Zone used fantasy, and I think Outer Limits used science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the hook with Black Mirror is technology. It's like, well, you know, we're going to use that. And pretty much all the episodes have that. As sort of a focal point, I would say.
Yeah, it's a good tip of the hat to Rod Serling for sure. I mean, with Twilight Zone and Night Gallery, you know, I remember Night Gallery too, which was more the horror based of the anthology stuff. So it's like this is just right in there with those.
And, it's definitely in the same exact ballpark as shows. So, but it's just, I mean, for what Black Mirror does, it's just. Because it is like with the budget and it's so it's not like I don't know, it feels like you're watching like these hour and a half long movies.
Oh cool, definitely.
Okay,
And since Netflix is now funding them, you know, they're putting the money into them now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I told Brian. The first two seasons weren't Netflix. Like, they were just there. They were out on
BBC or whatever, yeah.
And then Netflix was like, well, we'll finance some of this.
Cool.
And that, so I told him, John Hamm shows up in an episode, and I'm like, oh, I'm
Oh, yeah, that was a great episode.
Yes, it was.
That was a good one.
All right, that's I was going to watch The Expanse, but now I'm going to watch Black Mirror. So.
I think my favorite episode of Black Mirror is the one with the bees.
Yeah, that was, that's disturbing. That one was disturbing, actually. I mean,
all right.
And it's, that one felt like a movie.
You guys have convinced me. I'm starting that one tonight. Because I was going to start watching The Expanse on Sci-Fi, but I'll watch Black Mirror, and then I can watch The Expanse later.
You can blow through Black Mirror. It's easy.
So, all right.
Yeah. It just sucks you in.
Sweet.
But the one with the bees was so good. And then, like, it felt like, it really did feel like a movie. And they were characters. I think it's got, what's his name? Benedict Wong from Doctor Strange.
Yeah, he's in it.
That episode. He plays like a cop.
Cool.
And he's really good in it. And
what's her name from Trainspotting? Isn't that the one?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, Merida.
And,
Merida from Brave.
right. So it's got some, like, it's got really great acting. But, like, I found myself really invested in the characters. I'm like, this is only a one-off episode.
Yeah.
And these characters are, like,
oh, cool.
Like, you really start getting into it.
Nice.
And then the ending was so great. I won't spoil it. And I got to talk about Stranger Things. I mean, come on. That was, I mean, I binged through that. I've watched that series twice now.
Okay.
Really?
I said it's the Brian didn't like Stranger Things that much.
All right, let's be fair.
Oh man, that's you know what? My childhood was if you took Dazed and Confused and Stranger Things and you mashed them together.
Oh yeah.
That was my life. My life growing up.
Okay.
Like those
See, you and I have similar paths of life.
So with Stranger Things, I liked everything with the kids. And I liked how it ended. And, like, honestly, it could have just ended and it would have been fine. I didn't like any of the adults and I hated all of the teenagers. So.
Really? Wow. Yeah. See, I even love the teenagers. I thought everyone, the only part where it, I think they probably lost me a little bit, and this is everyone's critique, is Winona Ryder's character gets a little, like, she goes a little helter-skelter off the deep end.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because her son is abducted. But, I mean, she plays the part. I go back and forth with her character. I'm like, sometimes she makes me cringe, but then other times I'm, like, really invested in her character. I'm like, God, I understand that what she feels like. She's going crazy, and she really plays crazy. Like, she takes it really far. But other than that, I mean,
she felt like she wasn't acting really.
She lost me. So she had me when she ran out of the house, when the monster was like, get out, you know?
And she
got in the car and then she did what every white lady in a movie does in a horror movie.
Went
goes
back in.
Back in. I was like,
because her son, it was about if she had left,
I get it. I mean,
would have never gotten an answer about,
I know. But it was just like for a second it was like something different. And then, I don't know. I'm a dad like you. You know, I would have like, you know, the monster could be like, get out. I'm like, now I need to know what's happening with my kid.
Right.
So, like, I get that part, but yeah.
I mean, as a parent, I felt her conflict where she was like, oh, my God. I am freaking the hell out. There's a monster in my house. And she runs and bolts out. But then she's like, but she hears her kid. Like, mm-hmm. She hears the music. She hears the Clash song. And she knows that's her son calling out to her with that, you know, the Clash song. So then she's like, oh, crap. I got to go back in. I don't have a choice, you know. Like, I love that dilemma there. But I mean, the show, I mean, come on, it's like, it takes the best of John Carpenter, like it's like all these, you know, it's got like all the 80s, it's just, I don't know. It's just, I love Carpenter films and that show is very much influenced. It has, I think, that 1980s Carpenter vibe to it.
Oh yeah. There's some Carpenter, some Toby Hooper
angles and the edits.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just...
I came around at the end. Like I said, I enjoyed the ending and everything, and I'm interested in learning more about Matthew Modine and things like that. But yeah, those first three or four episodes, like, I think it took me two tries to get through the first half of the season, and then Johnny was like, "It's awesome," and I have another buddy who was like, "It's awesome," and I'm like, "All right, I'll power through." And like, and when I got to like episode six of what it was eight, so like those last three, I was like, "Okay," I was all in with those last three. Like, I can take the first.
Yeah, that
five
was one where I actually binged it all the day it came out, and usually Brian's ahead of me on stuff, and I'm like, "I actually watched something, and you didn't." It's like, okay.
He sleeps, I don't, so
yeah.
There's the difference there. All right, cool, Joe. So you're going to be at Emerald City Comic Con on March 2nd through the 5th, right?
Yep.
And it says here you're going to be just below the block, so if you're in Seattle, you should know what that means. Where are you going to be after?
The block is, I was going to say the block is like a big, it's just an area for like independent artists.
Okay.
Every like C2E2 Emerald City New York Comic Con, they have an artist section called the Block, and my booth is actually for Seattle. It's right below there.
Okay, cool. And then so what's after Seattle?
Let me think. After Seattle, I come home for like a week, and then it's Wizard World Cleveland, March 17th, and then I think a couple weeks later is Gem City Comic Con, April 2nd.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to be there, and then after Gem City, a couple weeks later is Celebration in Orlando. So we got Star Wars Celebration coming up, and then right immediately after that is Chicago. So C2E2 in Chicago, like a week later, and then. Yeah, from there it's on like Donkey Kong. It's just sort of like nonstop.
Are you not doing the Cincinnati Comic Expo this year?
No, I usually do it. Okay. I'm waiting for the invite. I usually they get in touch with me in the spring or summer, I have every intention of being there. As long as they've had me there for like 3 years in a row or so now, I think so. I'm hoping it's such a fun show.
Yeah,
and I have a lot of friends down there, so I'm hoping to be back.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you there. We'll see you at Gem City too, probably. So.
Yeah. I'll be in Dayton, downtown Dayton, for that one.
Sweet.
The local shows.
All right. So, Joe, where can everybody find your work and how to kind of follow along with you online?
Well, my main site is joecaroni.com, so it's pretty easy to remember if you can spell my last name. So joecaroni.com, and then from there, you can follow me on Facebook. I have my fan page on Facebook, and then I have my regular page on Facebook, so you can follow me at either place. And then I have Twitter and Instagram, and all of this is linked on my website. So if you go to joecaroni.com, you can follow me on all of my social media from there. So.
Yeah. So one last thing I was going to ask you about, the Thing piece that you were working on.
Yeah.
What is that for?
That is for, I guess I can talk about, well, I think I already actually announced it. It's for the 35th anniversary of the film. There's a studio, a publisher putting out in coordination with John Carpenter. So he's part of this. He signed off on this project. They're putting out an art book for the Thing, for his movie, his 1982 film,
right?
Which will be 35 years old this summer. So they're putting out an art book, and they asked pretty much every artist under the sun. Apparently, I mean, there's like 200 artists. Wow. I don't even know. There's tons of artists that are doing basically a tribute piece for the Thing, like a pinup or a painting, and I did, I think you probably saw it on my Instagram or my Facebook, but I posted a couple pictures or a video of me working on my piece.
So yeah.
I did my version of a movie poster because I'm a huge John Carpenter fan. And the Thing is actually it's my number two favorite horror film of all time.
Okay.
So, yeah. So getting asked to do a piece for The Thing, I was like, heck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to totally do that.
So this is going to be a book that's going to be published, or?
Yeah, it's called, the company's called Printed in Blood, and they do these art books. And I think the book is just called The Thing Art Book. I think that's the name of it. It's called The Thing Art Book. And it's for the 35th anniversary. It might have a longer title.
All righty.
But if you go on Facebook, you can look up The Thing Art Book. If you type in, I think art book is all in one word, but if you punch that in, you'll see that they've been releasing previews for the last few months now of like everyone's artwork for the book. So,
cool.
So yeah, you'll see the full reveal of my piece, I guess. Well, Johnny, you might actually see it in person.
Yeah.
I'll probably show it to you. I might even have prints of it. I don't think I'm supposed to have prints that early, but I went ahead and did a few early prints just to kind of try it out. I think the book comes out like in, I don't know, maybe June or July. Or
all right. Awesome.
But yeah. You'll see the artwork. I'll show you the artwork in person.
Okay. Awesome. Cool.
All right. Well, Joe, thanks for taking the time to sit down and talk with us for as long as you did. We know you're really busy, so we really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I've been painting Star Wars the entire time.
Wow.
I've got my headset on, my Bluetooth. So
there you go. Do you use like a touch like pad, the drawing pad, or do you do like on a tablet or?
It's a Cintiq, so basically, I paint directly on the screen.
Yeah,
I'm running Photoshop out of my iMac, which is connected to my Cintiq. So, essentially, I have been playing a little bit on the iPad, doing some color stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's some apps like AstroPad and Procreate, which you can do some stuff on there. And
Cool.
Trying to with my Apple Pencil, I'm still playing with doing some pieces on there.
So. That was my next question: if you played with the Apple Pencil yet or not. So,
yeah, I've got one. Yeah, and I haven't done anything finalized yet. What I'm hoping to do is to take some of this new Star Wars art I'm doing, and then do some finishing touches with AstroPad. With the Apple Pencil on my iPad Pro. So that's the plan. We'll see how it works out. So.
Cool. All right. Well, Joe, thanks. And I'm sure we'll see you in a couple weeks at Gym City.
Yeah.
But safe travels with all the shows this year. And again, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, right. Joe.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun. I love geeking out about this
stuff. Yep.
Thanks. Okay, and we're back live-ish. This is Johnny and Brian again. I hope you guys enjoyed that.
Yeah. If you listen to the whole thing in one listen, thanks for doing that.
Dude, that is a marathon, and you're really bored at work. Okay, so for cover-up, Johnny had this great idea that we come up with just 10 random characters. And what we're going to do is we have Johnny's name's in a Cincinnati Reds hat, and my name in a Spider-Man hat. Which just happened to be sitting right next to the desk. Yeah. Worked out nicely. And what we're going to do is I'm going to pick
so
a
it's
title.
Grab bag.
It's a grab bag, yeah. So we each have 10 characters that we put into the bag. I'm going to grab one out of the Reds hat. That's Johnny's list.
Oh, you're going to grab one out of mine.
Okay. And then Johnny's going to grab one out of the Spider-Man hat. Like that's my too. List. Yeah. All right. Here, we'll do yours first.
All right, go ahead.
So we'll lift it up. Shake it.
Oh my God! What was that?
Sound effects. All right. Let's see.
Could have just put the hat up to the microphone.
All right. And ah,
what?
Darth Vader.
All right.
Too easy. Okay. All right. And then
and we'll
Johnny's
save the other names.
Yeah, so, we're not going to give away the other.
So
names.
So hold yours, I guess.
You hold it and then shake it.
What? You just picked mine. I'm picking yours now.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
The look of confusion on your face would have been classic. Oh, my God. There. Now I can hear it. All right.
All right.
Here we go. Darth Vader.
Static.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so Johnny is going to have Darth Vader. And then I'm going to have Static, which should be fun.
Yeah.
Because I, like, you know, so, I mean, you have the whole Star Wars universe to pick from.
Sure.
And so what we're going to do is, like, just like normal, we pick our favorite five covers. Except for this time, it's just going to be this one character.
Right.
And it can be from the Star Wars movie adaptations, all the Dark Horse stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, so mine can be the, you know, the Milestone comics or the Static Shock comics.
Yep.
So, or the Static Shock New 52, which there was a really cool one in there that I'm already thinking of.
There's Young Justice, Justice League, I think he might have been on covers of.
So. He was, and Teen Titans.
Yeah. So. You know the format.
Anywho.
Anything with a cover on it that's a comic book.
Yep.
So.
All right. Awesome. Well, okay. Thank you, Joe, first and foremost.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
All of Joe's dates are in our show notes for where he's going to be for the next few months. I might just put everything he's got on his website up.
I was
going to
say, just tag his website in there.
It is up there.
Everything's on his website.
And JoeCaroni.com. Yeah, Joe Caroni, two R's. Again, thank you. It was awesome. We love talking to you. And hopefully some of the things we talked about after the show will come to fruition.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
that would be cool.
That would make my year. Sweet. All right. So we're the Infamous Podcast. You guys, you know, you can always contact us via email at Infamous Podcast. You can contact us on all the various social networks that we're on, which mainly consists of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yep.
Just at Infamous Podcast. It's really easy to get to us, just like it's infamouspodcast.com. My name is Brian Tudor. I am on most social networks as Brian Tudor.
Johnny Podorf's on most social networks as Johnny Podorf.
All right. And on that note, whenever you
$5 Patreon.
Whenever you guys are listening to this, go to Patreon and give $5 so Johnny stops doing that.
It's called advertising, son.
It's subliminal. No, it's called badgering. Anyway. All right. Well, on that note, you guys have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever you're listening to this, and we will talk to you soon.
Later.